After 50 years of stepping on its neck, now the United States is preparing to normalize relations with Cuba. President Obama's wide-ranging diplomatic bet involves finance, trade, border security, and travel. That means it will spark a lot of work for you, your employees, and contractors. With more on the implications, we turn to Don Kettle, a professor at the University of Maryland's Public Policy School, and he joins me now. Professor Don, great to have you on.
It's great to be with you this morning, Tom.
All right, this is a little bit like waking up in 1984. Guess what? We're no longer at war with Cuba. Cuba's now our friend. And so it seems like there is, I guess my first question is, how much Cuba expertise or what kind of expertise is left in the federal government?
It's stunning, isn't it? After all of this time, we're talking about things that in some ways we just had not imagined we'd be dealing with. And of course, the State Department has been on the case for a long time. There's been an intersection, as it's been called, that's been housed in the Swiss embassy for a very long time now. And so the State Department has people who have been working on this for a long time. And the plan will be, of course, to convert that in time to an embassy. But this is in very short order going to ripple out into lots and lots of things where we're going to have to build lots of expertise in a very big hurry that's going to go well beyond what it is that this intersection has been working on for quite a while.
I mean, in many ways, I don't want to make a political comparison here, but in many ways, Cuba more resembles North Korea than maybe any other country. And there's been a lot of focus on North Korea. I wonder if any of that translates, that kind of ability to see into what's a very difficult closed government, can be applied to Cuba.
We've at least had offices there, and we've been able to operate in Havana for some time. And gradually, bit by bit, we've had an expansion of tourism and to some degree a bit of trade as well. But it's a matter of really trying to understand what it is that's happening. The economy there right now is not in great shape. There are lots of political pressures from Cubans in the United States as well that will put some constraints on what it is that the government can do. So there are lots of pressures on both sides. But the other big, huge thing out there is that there are lots of people in the United States who see tremendous economic opportunities. There is the possibility of a vast expansion of the internet. Most of the internet in most places in Cuba is not terribly well developed, and so there are a lot of companies who see tremendous opportunities. There are big opportunities in tourism, and so there are a lot of American hotel operators and travel operators and tour companies who can imagine enormous possibilities here for satisfying the demand of people to go and visit. And then, of course, we see all these great films of these terrific old American cars that are still driving around Havana. But at some point, people are going to be wanting to buy new cars as well. And so I know the car manufacturers are thinking about this. So this is an initiative that goes well beyond what it is that we really can fully understand now and well beyond the capacity of what we've been doing and well beyond what this intersection on its own is going to be able to handle at this point.
Now, one thing that's not changing, though, is that the Cuban people can't possess dollars. Only the government can have dollars. So the government will take in whatever dollars flow its way. But the Cubans themselves, the people, get paid in pesos. And so that's not changing so far. That might take Congress to change that. And wouldn't that be an important new law or regulation in order for any of this economic benefit to come to Cuba itself?
This is a big piece about what's going on because it has to do not only with the currency, but also another part of the change in policy, which will at least allow American credit cards to be accepted there. And so, of course, there's not only the question about American dollars flowing back and forth, but also the question of credit cards and other forms of transactions. If we're really going to try to grow the economy there and have economic interchange, it's going to go well beyond the flow of dollars and pesos into some of these other mechanisms like credit cards and other things. And that means that the Treasury Department and even the Federal Reserve are going to be heavily involved in trying to figure out not only how to try to manage these transactions, but how to develop the basic ground rules for making things happen, because the administration clearly would like to move a lot more quickly than many members of Congress would. And so the administration is going to have to walk an administrative tightrope to try to deal with the internal politics here in the United States. But it's also very clear that the door is now open, and in all likelihood, there's just no going back.
Now, these negotiations between the United States and Cuba have taken place mostly in Canada under some auspices of, you know, the Canadians are helping, and I guess even the Vatican was helping, or from according to published reports. So it might have come as a change, a surprise rather, to a lot of the agencies that will be affected, that except for state, that was directly involved. And so I imagine there's probably a lot of scurrying around right now with what does this mean for me and what have I got to do?
Exactly. This was a huge surprise. I mean, who would have guessed that one of the major breakthroughs right before Christmas would come from the Vatican, of all places, with the Vatican operating as
well. Before Christmas, between. What better place?
Exactly. And so this an incredible story, isn't it? This is one of those things that you just couldn't make up. We've got a movie that's going down the tubes about North Korea, but this is an amazing episode here as well. But there are a lot of people and a lot of agencies who are now going to have to scramble to catch up because the state has its own capacity. But quite frankly, we haven't had in a very, very, very long time any kind of opportunity to think about how we would suddenly try to expand our relationships, not quite from scratch, but from a very, very far down, not very well supported area to a set of initiatives that are going to affect lots of departments and agencies. I mean, the Treasury Department we talked about, Commerce is going to be hugely involved in both the international trade and the economic development pieces of this. Homeland Security's got pieces with customs and with immigration. The Coast Guard's going to be a player and simply trying to police the waters in between. The State Department is going to have to not only expand its intersection, but at some point it's going to need a larger facility, which means a new embassy. And then looking down the road, the big political battle that's sure to come on appointing and getting confirmed an ambassador to this country as well, too, on top of that. The United States, the executive branch is going to be battling over this one with Congress, and that's just certain to be an enormous battle down the road because a lot of the Republicans who were surprised by this are certain to stand in the way of anything that's going to advance the administration's agenda on this. But for the executive branch agencies, all of this means, in all likelihood, a huge task force that's going to stretch across agency by agency by agency, and advancing things that, for the most part, we don't have a lot of experience in standing up an embassy going from 0 to 70 in what's going to be an enormously short period of time under enormous scrutiny and under enormous pressure and enthusiasm on the part of some people, for sure.
We're speaking with Don Kettle. He's a professor at the University of Maryland School of Public Policy. And there's some legal issues that might involve justice and patent and trademark office, even because of when some of the families fled Cuba when Castro took over, came to the United States and went other places in the world. They took with them brand names that had been in the family, but the Cuban government reestablished the same brand names in Cuba. And so the question will come, who owns the name Romeo and Julieta for cigars, for example, since there's a Cuban one and there's a non-Cuban one, or maybe they're in the Dominican Republic.
Well, and the clear pressure is going to be everybody's going to want Cubans. And so the question is, what is it that's going to constitute a real Cuban? And who is it who owns the trademark and the copyright and the patent for that kind of material, too? And that's going to have to be resolved. And so much of the business of trying to develop and redevelop some of the trade that existed back in the 1950s is going to have to revolve around these questions and resolving things that, as you point out, in many ways ended very quickly as many families fled at the last second as the government there changed hands back when Castro took over. So the legal issues there are tough and are going to involve some puzzles in international law, which are going to be pathbreaking in themselves. You can just see this rippling across the government in so many ways that haven't hit the headlines yet, but which are going to keep people very, very busy for a very long time. It's going to be fascinating to watch.
And a final question. Let's face it, the Cuban government is still not a very nice government. I just ask Alan Gross and other people that have been imprisoned there and the many, many, many people over the decades that they have oppressed. What leverage is left for the United States to kind of pry that part open? Because that's really the ultimate objective, is to create some sort of a democratic situation there and not perpetuate the Castro type of government.
Well, that's exactly right. There are two big things that are at play here. One is that at some point, and probably in the not too distant future, there's going to be a transition in the government itself. The United States and the Cubans have been dealing with Castros now since the early 1960s. And so at some point, both Fidel and Raul, both of whom are in their 80s, will be passing on the government to new leaders. And so the question is, what is that going to look like? The United States is now in a much better position to influence the way that that goes. And how will that influence work? It's almost certain to happen more in economic than in political terms, I suspect. And so that makes all of these issues involving patents, trademarks, treasury, commerce, homeland security, customs, immigration, and all the rest absolutely essential to the next stage of what's going to happen in shaping the reemergence, in all likelihood, of some kind of democratic rule in Cuba. So that you look at these economic pressures and we see even greater importance in how they're going to shake themselves out as time goes by.
Don Kettle is a professor at the University of Maryland School of Public Policy. As always, thanks so much for joining me.
So great to be with you, Tom.